from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. There's supposed to be music somewhere. No tip for the end. There we go. Val, there is a metaphor here. Our engineer, Val Ivanka, gets no tip today. She's shaking her head. You know what? I'm a good guy. We're going to tip anyway. We're going to talk tipping this hour because I want to tell you about a scandal that happened. Monday, April 13th, outside of Toledo, the nation was gripped by the drama of Hillary Clinton stopping to pick up lunch at a Chipotle. Was she dressed properly? Did she order the food of the people? And most importantly, did she leave a tip? If this storyline leaves you wanting to spend the next 19 months living technology-free with the Trappist monks, waiting out the bilge of U.S. election coverage, you are not alone. This hour, we're going to look at the sickness of the American media's political coverage, but we're also going to use this Chipotle episode to talk tipping etiquette. Are we even supposed to tip at Chipotle? What about other fast food? Where are we supposed to tip? What about coffee service, haircuts, salon, landscaping, taxi driving, car washes, and more? We invite your take on the etiquette of tipping. You can call the program 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. And let me welcome our expert panel, Eric Hupert from Poor Coffee Parlor in Rochester. He's a barista, the beer and wine manager over there. And Eric, thank you for being here in studio.
Thank you.
Nice to see you here. Caitlin Graham is the head bartender and general manager of Cure Restaurant in Rochester's Public Market. Caitlin, nice to see you.
Hi there, Evan. Thanks for having me.
Stacy Cudzillo is the owner and manager of Park Avenue Salon and Day Spa. Stacy, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Mike Schwabel is the co-owner and president of Dicht & Schwabel Advertising, Marketing, and Public Relations. Mike, nice to see you.
Thank you. Great to be here.
And on the phone with us is our friend Tom Proietti, a resident scholar in media at St. John Fisher College. Tom is a very good tipper, but I don't know about Chipotle. How are you, Tom?
I'm doing well, Evan. I tip on everything but my XXI membership.
Oh, that cuts a little deep, Tom.
There might be a story there. I may get followed.
Tom, you talk about media literacy, and we talk about media coverage with you often on this program. I want to start with a couple of television clips, and I want to get your take on them. After this whole Hillary Clinton goes to Chipotle thing, the first is Mark Halperin talking to the folks on Morning Joe, the MSNBC morning show. Mark Halperin talking about the titanic significance of this moment, and I wish I were kidding. Let's listen to Mark Halperin.
Her problem now is not to prove people that she's ready to be president, because people think she is. The two words she needs are fun and new, and part of why yesterday was so successful is she looks like she's having fun, and she's doing, for her, new stuff. We've never seen her get a burrito before.
Wow, we've never seen her get a burrito before. That's actual analysis. What do you think, Tom?
Oh, Evan, it's so pathetic. It's even more pathetic than checking in at Hart's Grocers, on your Swarm app, and then putting up a photograph, a selfie on Facebook. I mean, that's kind of what we've done. Is we've reduced it to the simplest possible things, because anything more complex than this, the American public does two things: doesn't seem to have much of an appetite for it, and the second part of it is, if it got more complex than this, most of us wouldn't understand it.
Well, but I think that's partially the media's fault for I think to some degree.
I have to try.
To
interrupt you there, but I don't think you can't indict all the media, because I have a feeling that people listening to this program and listening to NPR on a regular basis and watching PBS and the BBC and spending their time in good places and their energies and in the right kinds of media forms, they are just as appalled as you are and as I am.
Well, I take the point on that, and I hope so. But I hope the mainstream media doesn't spend 18 more months on this. And then, Tom, I know that you're a big fan of the morning show at Fox News. And
yeah, I'm there every day.
Do you want to know what they had to say about this Hillary Clinton goes to Chipotle? Well, look, this is millions of people are watching this every day.
Yes, they are.
And again, this is Tom's favorite morning show. Let's listen.
The incognito burrito. Someone said on Twitter that she and Huma looked hungover.
Ooh.
Well, with the big glasses and the shades on.
Extra guac.
The traveling pants.
But was this the best way to connect with a chicken burrito bowl?
It's just so real. You know, she's like, listen, I want some food of the people, but I don't want it to be icky. I don't want it to be too ethnic. Is there some middle ground we can find? And Huma went, yeah, let's go to Chipotle. Got to eat off this hangover. I think what that says is the First Lady is quite ordinary looking in person.
I don't even know what to say to that, Tom. I mean, it's so stupid. If you want to criticize Hillary Clinton, there's plenty of legitimate ways to do that. I'm just so
absolutely.
I'm so annoyed by this. But again, millions of people are responding to that.
Yeah, it's something we call in the communication field, we call it static communion. It's the simplest material in the world to talk about, and it's, you know, it's just full of cheap shots. And again, I think it reflects very badly, not just on the media people doing this, but if you're actually sitting there paying attention to this and this is part of your daily diet, it's probably what you deserve. You know, it's kind of like if you're eating bad food, you're probably going to end up, you know, in a bad way health-wise. So if you're consuming a bad media diet, you know, that's kind of where you're going to end up as well.
I think that's well said. Well, what came out of that was the second scandal was not just did she get the right order, but did she leave a tip? And the New York Daily News headline, Clinton leaves no tip at Chipotle, with the caption, Hillary Clinton and her aide got food at an Ohio Chipotle, then treated the tip jar like a ne'er-do-well uncle. And that headline, I saw it all over the place. I didn't even know if you're supposed to leave a tip at Chipotle, Tom.
Well, one of the good things that comes out of this, Evan, though, is the conversation you're going to have for the next 55 minutes or so. And that is, you know, for a lot of us, we don't know when and how to tip. So there's, you know, I'd have to say I'm going to give them some credit. I'm going to give you credit for picking up on the lunacy of the activity that's been covered by the media, but also turning it into a civics lesson, because this is a topic, again, tipping was never covered in any college class or any elementary or high school class I ever went to. So I plan on listening for the next 50 minutes and becoming smarter by the end.
Well, before I let you go, you're somebody who, you've been to Europe many times, and
yes,
it's very different culturally. It's very interesting to me whenever I am in Europe to think about sort of having to relearn the custom. Am I supposed to leave a tip here? And what are the expectations? It is interesting. I've had European friends sort of bemused at the way Americans handle tipping.
Right, because, well, in Europe, for the most part, you don't tip, or if you do, at most, it would be 10%, and usually only in restaurant scenarios, not even in taxi cabs. I mean, that's, you know, it's just they're going to charge you whatever the trip was worth, or they're going to charge you whatever the meal was worth, and that's about it. And so you don't tip in many other circumstances. And again, even then, it's 10%. In the USA, we've kind of, you know, we've taken most of the, you know, the restaurant owners off the hook and left, you know, a lot of the compensation that's given to people, we've left that to the public and, you know, kind of based on their service.
You're a good tipper. I do know that about you. And I know,
yes,
that
I am.
For a number of reasons, you're a generous guy.
I grew up in a restaurant family,
yes,
and I watched the people around me, and I was at my brother's restaurant last night and thinking exactly the same thing, because I knew you and I were going to talk about this today. And I actually had a great conversation with our friend Jack Garer about it. And, you know, tipping, it's a mysterious topic, and it's one I'm really looking forward to learning more about.
All right, well, last question then for you. Is it possible that if Hillary Clinton had left a tip, somebody would have turned a headline into, Hillary so out of touch with basic fast food, she doesn't know that you're not supposed to leave a tip at a Chipotle?
You just did it. I mean, that's exactly the kind of thing that's going on in newsrooms today, and that's, you know, that's it's a very sad commentary. If that's part of the conversation, again, we should be talking about policy rather than tipping.
Thanks for taking the time, my friend. And the next time we talk, it will be, I'm sure, to break down other interesting media foibles. It's always good to catch up with you.
I love you, buddy. Thanks. Take
Tom
care.
Proietti, the resident scholar in media at St. John Fisher College, a member of WXXI who never tips on his memberships here. Let's go around the room now, and let's just ask basically, first of all, where everyone here is from. I'm going to start with Eric Cooper from Poor Coffee Parlor. You're many things there. You roast coffee. You're a barista. You manage the wine and beer program over there.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to coffee, I think coffee is a little bit of a murky one for people. So when people order coffee somewhere, is there an expectation of a tip?
Yeah, I think that it is a little bit more difficult. It stands in a bit of a middle ground in the service industry, I think. Even people that haven't had personal experience in the restaurant industry, they know that the tip is supposed to be there at some level. Maybe they're a little bit antiquated in thinking that 10% is going to equal a living wage for a server making $3.25 an hour. But coffee shops stand a little bit different, because we're more than the restaurant. It's expected that wages are going to be higher. We make more than minimum wage or minimum wage. So there's still a culture of tipping, I believe. It's just a little, like you said, it's a little bit murkier because it's not the restaurant. We don't offer table service, but we do offer personal service for each order and for each guest. So there's a little bit of both there. And tips for us, it still pays the bills, and it's still groceries, and it's still bus fare to get to work for some. And all of those factors are still at play, but we don't need them in the same way that a waiter or waitress that makes that $2 or $3 an hour does. So it's a little different.
What percentage of a barista's income is tips?
I mean, depends on how many tips they make.
Yeah, it's fair. Is there an average that you know, sort of an expected average?
I think that in our, just off the top of my head, I would say that for me, or for most of the staff at our shop, it probably ends up maybe in that 15 to 20% of our wages.
Okay. And so when you are somewhere else, or if you come into Poor and you're not working and you order a coffee, you're leaving what as a tip?
That's another interesting point, because now we're talking about percentages versus dollar value. And I have kind of a rule just that I follow. And it's different than a restaurant, because a restaurant's easy to go off percentages because your bill is high enough. Doing a percentage of a coffee, it could be a little bit funny, because it's like, do I leave, 22 cents on the dollar or whatever?
Right.
So I think that if my personal opinion is, if I can't leave a couple bucks on top of that, a buck, $2, $3, then I shouldn't spend $2 or $3 on the coffee to begin with. So for me, there's almost a minimum of, no matter what something costs, I can throw
at least
a couple
leave a whole
bucks
dollar
in the jar.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Around the table, if you guys are getting coffee, especially at a place like a parlor like that, are you leaving a tip, Caitlin Graham?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have spent my entire working life working for tips. So yeah, I think I have a tendency to perhaps over tip, but definitely on a cup of coffee, at least $1, if not $2, depending on the quality of the coffee, how much the coffee costs to begin with. But yeah, always a couple bucks.
Okay. Stacey?
Yes, absolutely. I always throw in a buck or two depending on what I'm buying. Exactly.
Okay.
What Caitlin said.
Mike Schwabel?
Oh, yes, definitely. I used to tip at Dunkin' Donuts drive-thru. They used to have a little jar there. Then they took it away, and I felt bad that I couldn't tip anymore. So
it's like Mike can see the board. Let me get a phone call, because Carolyn in Rochester wants to talk about Dunkin' Donuts tipping.
Oh.
Carolyn, go ahead.
Hi, thank you. It's funny that you mentioned Dunkin' Donuts, because I was just thinking of that. Having been a wait person for a majority of my life, working for less than $2 an hour, I kind of want to know where the line is drawn. I mean, if I'm tipping people at McDonald's and Dunkin' Donuts and Delta Sonic, do I tip my cashier at Wegmans because they put my eggs in a separate bag?
It's a fair question. What do you think? Why don't you answer it first, and then we'll let the panel tackle it.
I think that if you're making below minimum $5 because you're a tipped employee, then that's one thing. But I can't believe that all these franchises are paying their employees $2-3 an hour and then expecting to make up the difference with the tips that they may or may not make from us.
Well, and to be clear, the New York State just changed the tipped minimum. They call it a sub-minimum wage for tipped workers. And it's going
correct.
From, Caitlin can maybe tell, from $5 to $7.50 or something like that. Something like that. Is that right?
Something along those lines.
Okay, so it's still going to be sub-minimum wage, but not by as much. But Carolyn, thanks for the call. It's an interesting question. If somebody is doing a special service for me at Wegmans, like if I have something really heavy or a bunch of things or if I've got a screaming toddler and someone steps up to help and they carry something to the car with me, I may throw them a tip, Mike.
You may want to try that, but they're not allowed to take them at Wegmans.
Oh,
I know we actually did the video for the training for the Helping Hands people. So oftentimes they do get offered money, and they're told not to take it.
You see, this is why Mike Schwabel from Dixon Schwabel is here.
Yeah.
But that's interesting, because I think I would at least offer.
Right. I mean, it's all based on value, isn't it? What the person's doing for you. I mean, Dunkin' Donuts, I used to tip at Dunkin' Donuts because it was part of my morning routine, which is probably not a healthy thing to admit on the air. But, you kind of see the same person every day. You kind of form a relationship with these people. They know your order, and, what is an extra dollar or something? But then they took the jar away because management wouldn't let them do it anymore.
Interesting. Okay. Well, so, Carolyn, hopefully we at least answered the Wegmans question that they can't take it. I think I would offer. And I think take out Wegmans from the equation. If someone is doing something special for you, helping you out, I'd probably throw something their way.
Yeah.
It's sort of a natural reaction. We're going to get to some of more of your comments and questions that have come in. And if you want to join the program again, it's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. We're talking tipping etiquette. And Eric Hubert from Poor Coffee Parlor, just off Park Avenue. There's something.
Father to be.
A father to be. It could be any second now, by the way. Eric may be a partial guest this hour.
That's right.
So we'll see. Tip your doula. So we actually did tip our doula. It's funny we bring it up. But Eric, interestingly enough, in your place of business, there is an automated screen for when you pay with a credit card now.
Sure.
What's it called? The Square system?
Yeah,
we use
Square as a point of operating system.
You'll see Square at Hearts and, you know, a number of places. And Square gives you a chance. It kind of prompts you on a screen. Do you want to tip 10, 15, 20%? It calculates it for you. When you instituted that system, did it change the amount of tips people left?
Oh, without a doubt, yeah. And it is just a communicative matter of convenience for people, and it's a benefit. And, a lot of that was just us opening our doors as a new shop and continuing to add better services, both for the business and efficiency, for the employees, for the customers, but noticeable difference.
Have you ever had a complaint, someone saying, hey, you're shaking me down for a tip here? There's pressure because of that system.
No, it's nothing that we ever, prompt.
Right.
For people, right. it's part of the whole signing off process for credit card payments. Mm-hmm. And there's even I think the button for no thanks is even bigger than the buttons for tipping options. So just to make sure that there's no pressure there. But it's as easy as just turning the screen to that person and, you know, not acting like you're staring at them while they make their decision.
Poor Coffee certainly has a lot of regulars, and I'm sure you can think of some regulars who don't tip, and that's not to malign them. Sometimes it's just sort of getting into the rhythm of it, the habit of it, the cultural change of it. Are you offended by regular customers who don't tip?
Oh, not at all. I mean, this is such an ambiguous conversation. I mean, that's part of the reason why we're having it. And within that whole framework, I feel like my specific industry is even a little bit more gray because there are so many contexts from the drive-thru Dunkin' Donuts to a Starbucks to what we do, which is, I mean, you know, we're dedicating specific time for each cup of coffee to each person. It's definitely more of an immersive experience, but there's now.
So you're saying it's much more tip appropriate. What
yeah,
you do.
not necessarily. I believe that we're
though.
Working for it, and I believe that we're like you. It is a conversation of value, but it is part of this conversation that's difficult and it's gray. So there's never an expectation. One, because we do make a wage. We're not making sub minimum wage. It's still a valuable part of our incomes as employees, but it's never a maligning negative thing. That there's an expectation there.
The phones are on fire, and we're going to try to work through all the different industries and tipping, but let me get a couple other quick questions before I get back to the phone lines. Amanda wants to know, are we supposed to tip at Starbucks if we're tipping for coffee? Starbucks is not quite the same as a Pour or a Fuego or a Founders or what have you, or Joe Bean, but Eric, do you tip at Starbucks? Do you go to Starbucks? Oh, no. You're going to say, I don't go to Starbucks.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I
you've been to
would
a Starbucks.
Tip. Yes,
don't tell
of course.
Me you've never
of
been
course.
To a Starbucks. Okay.
And yeah, I think that that in and of itself is a weird thing in the industry. I'm sure I'm kind of looking at Caitlin now. Like, we offer different things, but in no way does that mean I think that as employees we're better than them as employees or someone that works somewhere else.
That's a really gray area. I mean, I feel like we deal with this kind of in boutique or concierge food service.
Sure.
You know, you're talking about specialty coffee versus generic coffee. You know, as a bartender, we make craft cocktails. Well, how does that differentiate me between, you know, from the girl who's working at the corner dive, you know, pouring shots and draft beers? Really, in mechanism, nothing. But maybe in intention and thought process, a bit more. So it's this kind of nebulous idea of perceived value that has to do with the skill set or the intention that's been being put into it. So it becomes sort of a more personal context, maybe.
Sure.
Would you say? But I think that you know, anyone who's providing a service, mm-hmm. is is valuable. And then within the context of that service, you have to think about things like subminimum wage and then the attention that is being given specifically to you and to the service that they are offering you personally. So, you know, something that makes service at Pour, I was just there yesterday morning, had the best coffee. but, you know, service at Pour is a little bit different than service at Dunkin' Donuts because they're, you know, they're really taking a lot of time and attention
and
to that.
And it's supposed to be, is what
and
you're
it's
saying.
Supposed
it's
to be.
It's not to malign Dunkin' Donuts.
Not at
they
all.
They are in speed, efficiency, doing different things.
Exactly.
Yeah, sure.
So it is hard to kind of qualify that, I think. But you just have to make those internal, almost moral qualifications for yourself about how much you're getting on a reciprocal return from the service that's being provided to you.
Okay, we're going to hit tipping on salon service, haircutting, bartending, restaurant services, car washes, and more. And I'm going to get to more of your calls here. Rochelle writes to the program and makes a good point following up on our Wegmans discussion. She says, offering someone a tip when you know they're not supposed to take it seems rude, mean, and condescending. I was simply saying if I didn't know they weren't supposed to take it. And my natural instinct is if they do something really nice, I want to offer them a tip. But Rochelle's saying you could put the worker in a difficult place. And I take that point because I don't want someone at Wegmans, especially a helping hand, to be in an awkward spot. So I won't offer the tip, but I think there's something nice you could do. And Carol in Rochester has a good idea for what we can do for them. Carol, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yes, when I'm at Wegmans and someone does something over and above their usual wonderful service, I make it a point to take a comment card, first of all, to really notice their name so I know who I'm talking about, but get a comment card and write what special service I was given and drop it in the box so that management knows that this person did something over and above wonderful.
I think that's a great idea, Carol. Thanks for the call. Handwritten notes are so valuable to begin with, but let me ask two people in management at the table. I'll start with you, Stacy. You're at an operation that your employees can be tipped, but if someone leaves a special note for you as the owner of Park Avenue Salon, you get a special note from someone. That's got to be tremendously valuable to you and that employee too.
It's absolutely valuable. It's a great way for me as the employer to tell my employee what a great job they're doing. Oh, I had a even if a client just calls me to say, I had a client call me and they just want to tell me you knocked it out of the park. Good job today. It's amazing what even that kind of feedback does for someone's morale on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Just makes it that much easier to go to work every day. And that's what we're all doing.
We ought to do more of it. You know, I mean, and I'm not, I'm not trying to be condescending. I'm just speaking myself. I wish I would think to do that more often. And Mike Schwabel, you probably hear from your own clients who are talking about your employees. And that, as a manager, has to be tremendously valuable.
Best emails I ever get. And we share them with the team. But that is the best thank you, really. That you can get. And I know when I, you know, want to thank somebody in the office, I'll go and talk to them. My wife is a little more a thinker as opposed to a feeler, but she takes time every week to write handwritten notes to several of our employees, and that makes a huge difference. So, and it's not that hard to do, and it means so much.
Yeah, Carol, that's a great point. Back to the phones, Paul in Brighton. Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, I have to say, I'm really stricken with a lot of guilt here, in spite of the fact that your guests say that don't feel obligated. After listening to this, I feel like cringing here. I do tip, of course, at restaurants, but that's pretty much it. I don't visit, frankly, gourmet coffee shops. When I do go to Starbucks, I don't tip. I just didn't think it was expected.
Oh, I think we're saying here probably you're probably doing just fine.
What about if I go to a place like Macy's and a salesperson helps me a lot in finding just the right clothing, the right fit? Am I supposed to be tipping that person?
You're overpaying at Macy's anyhow. No, I'm just kidding.
I mean, I think perhaps that's what Mike was addressing, you know, in saying and you know, that thank yous, verbal thank yous, can mean a lot too. I know for us as customers come in and specifically comment on certain employees and how much they've enjoyed the experience. You know, you can't be everywhere at one time as a manager. And so when you get customer feedback, that's going to influence your impression of your employees and the work they're doing as well. You can't stand at the table and listen to the server deliver their spiel every single time and every single night. So you're really getting an honest read on how the server is performing or how the bartender is performing at point of service. The more positive feedback you get, the more likely you are to consider that person for better shifts, for more responsibilities, and so forth. So I think that it does sort of pay it forward to that person in their professional development and their potential for growth within whatever field they're doing, especially I would imagine at a place like Macy's or Wegmans, where there is sort of the upward mobility in their business structure, that if someone gets recognized consistently, those opportunities would be there for them.
I think this is one of the big takeaways from the hour already, is that a great tip is really indicating to management your appreciation for great service and a great performance, and I'm going to try to do that more often. Back to the phones, Laura in Rochester. Go ahead, Laura.
Hi, good afternoon to you and all your guests.
Hello.
Hello?
Go ahead.
Okay. I always think I tip appropriately and generously, but recently I had a flat tire on one of those 10-degree winter days, and while I was waiting for AAA to change the tire, I started wondering if I should tip the gentleman or not. So I did give him a gift card I had, because I didn't have much cash on me, but I'm wondering what your guests think about tipping the person that changes your tire or helps you on the highway.
Hmm. It's a good question, Mike.
I think it's wonderful. I mean, again, it all goes back to the value of the service you're receiving, and on a cold day, that's a huge way to say thank you to somebody, and it's immediate.
Yeah, so Mike is saying yes. Stacy Cadillo?
I think it's awesome. I had a similar situation this year. I was at a full-service gas station in Brockport near my house, and it was about 4 degrees out. And these poor guys, red faces, right? So when I got to work, I called Salvatore's and sent them lunch for the day. They don't know
Perfect.
Who sent it. It's even better when they don't know who it's from. So I'm with Mike. I love it.
Good stuff. Caitlin?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Having always worked in a tip-based industry, I think I tend to over-tip across the board in life. But yeah, those instances, for sure. Tow truck driver, please, I don't want to do it. I'm super grateful. I have AAA for a reason. I love it. And all of those sorts of things. My boyfriend works in the contractors union over at URMC. And, you know, the way they get recognized is that either patients who come in, other members of the URMC staff will nominate employees for what's called a strong star. And so they get, you know, they get a bit of departmental recognition. And these things add up and then can be reflected in bonuses and stuff like that at the year end. So I think any time someone, I mean, this really loops back to the media issue as well. Here we are. We're nitpicking Hillary Clinton over Chipotle. Are you kidding me? I mean, that's just asinine. It's crazy. And so here we have this whole media structure talking about every little minutia of negativity that they can get their hands on. Nobody's talking about the positive things. Nobody's talking about Hillary's career in foreign service and, you know, anything like that. Like, no one is having those discussions because, what, it's not palatable to be positive to the American, consumer or the American listener? I mean, I think that's crazy. So if we can kind of tip the balance back towards recognizing positivity instead of harping on what everybody's failing at, I mean, this country's kind of a disaster right now, but there's a lot of good stuff happening too. So why aren't we talking more about that?
We're going to try to cover a lot of ground in the remaining 25 minutes. This hour is flying by. Tim in Pittsburgh. Go ahead, Tim.
I don't think people think about this one much, but yesterday I had 2 full-size beds and box springs delivered. And I'm guessing, and to top it all off, my wife and I decided to buy a sectional, which did not look like it was fun getting into the house. And I figured the least I could do was tip the guys and so they could have something for lunch, $20 for lunch. And I don't think people think about that, but it's not like those guys are making a ton of money. And for what they have to go through, because I know what I go through putting stuff or dragging stuff into my house, and there's a lot more cursing and scraping the walls and everything. Man, they didn't make a mark, and that's the least you could do for them. The only problem was on the way home, I forgot to, Evan, you'll appreciate this, I forgot to hit the ATM, so I had no cash on me. So I took a 20 out of my 6-year-old's picture.
I do, very much so. That's good stuff.
Did you put an IOU in there?
Thank you, Tim. I think everyone's given a thumbs up on
oh,
that.
Yeah. Yeah, that
not robbing up, your 6-year-old, but.
You know, that brings up a good point. What about hotels? Because, you know, you see the guys making your coffee, you see the guys carrying in the couch and the bed, so you kind of have face-to-face contact. What about at hotels and things like that?
It's a good point. I mean, hidden service is still service. Right. Our eyes are still service.
I think that's where the conversation becomes, and it is already becoming, less about dollars. Like, when do I actually hand somebody currency for providing me a service or going above and beyond? But it's the sending the anonymous pizza, or just focusing on positive, or mm-hmm. giving the guys some cash for lunch. I think that it's just changing a framework of value and appreciation more than it is specifically saying, all right, now
we could have
endless people calling in. We could think of endless scenarios of, what about XYZ? What about XYZ? When do I actually give money for a service? But if we just focus on a framework of positive thinking, either paying back, like sending lunch back to the guys, or paying it forward to the next person that we see, mm-hmm. because we can't pay it back to all of the hotel employees or all the back behind the scenes people that make the world go round, but we can continue to pay it forward and just showing appreciation to those around us, to those in varying levels of the service industry. And I think that those things, I mean, even kind of getting back to one of the original questions with the shop for us about the regulars and what if they don't tip, there's something much more valuable about a regular coming in every day and choosing to spend time at our shop. That's paying my wage more than just the $2 they may or may not tip. And I would rather have that. I'd rather see that person every day and not get a tip than, you know, maybe get a buck or two here and there, because it's establishing value in a different way.
Okay, let me fly through a couple other comments that have come in here. Melanie says, love the show, especially this one. I'm a generous tipper in restaurants, even in diners, when the service is really good. In a coffee bar, however, I usually get inexpensive drinks like a plain coffee or just an espresso. It seems excessive for me to leave a dollar tip when the cost of the coffee is something like $2.25. I will typically leave 30 to 50 cents, and I hope that doesn't seem cheap.
I don't want to sound negative when I say I think that it's cheap, because I don't think. I think it's nice. I think it's generous. I think going above and beyond in any way is a positive thing. I'm not sure. Like, it's fine. I would say, you know, that to feel like the expectation to have to leave that isn't something that you should feel. In our industry, it presents an interesting conversation, and one that is a bit of a rabbit trail that I won't go down. But I mean, living wages, we charge $3.75 for a cup of coffee versus a dollar, because this is a living wage issue from the very source. A dollar cup of coffee, the farmer that grew it's not making a living wage. If I can sell it for a profit,
I think that's
a dollar.
A big thing on our end too. You know, what the cuisine we're offering, the you know, services we're providing, they all come with an incredible amount of integrity behind them, from the ingredients we source to the, you know, the manner with which we're selecting what we choose to offer the customer. So I think that there is perhaps a second level of obligation that's behind ours, which is why we feel that we can charge what we do, because we want to keep that standard of quality and integrity going back, you know, another level beyond the point of service. And I think to change that paradigm within the service industry, especially the food service industry, is super important. I mean, that's the locavore movement. It's local economy. It's environment. It's all of those branches. And, you know, for us, being sub-minimum wage, we are living off of tips. It's not a courtesy. It's
and by the way,
living wage.
That is the big difference here. But among the many things we're talking about, when it comes to a subminimum wage tipped worker versus tipping for something for good service, et cetera, so there is a distinction. I think everyone agrees with
that. Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, one of my good friends and coworkers is French, and in France, and I'm going to butcher the pronunciation of this, but they have a tipping idea called pourboire, something along those lines. But the idea is that you leave 50 cents a year or something like that is supposed to get the server a cappuccino or a glass of wine at the end of their shift. That's courtesy. That's paying it forward. That's saying, hey, you know, you were really lovely. You did a nice job. But the servers there are making making a living wage. And perhaps this is a paradigm shift that needs to happen nationally here as well.
Yeah, yeah.
We need to have that dialogue. But I think that that, again, talk about rabbit trails, goes into minimum wage, standard of living, and then also a shift from perhaps professional career development options being less and less available and going into more trade options being both laudable and viable for the next, you know, next wave of the American working class. So that's, you know, that's a topic, I'm sure, for another show. But it is something important to consider that you have the aspect of tipping where it's, hey, guys, like, you were awesome today. It was super cold out, or my coffee's beautiful. Thanks so much. To then, like, no, we're actually living off of these tips. This is how we make our money. We don't even make minimum wage without it. So it's, you know, there's a lot of levels to that. But I think, you know, what we're saying with regard to Poor Coffee Parlor, is 50 cents cheap? Well, no, of course not. It's appreciated. Mm-hmm. But in the same breath, you know, if you can afford to pay $2 for a cup of coffee, you can probably afford to pay $3. And the difference that gesture will make to both the pocketbook and just the morale, as was mentioned earlier, of the employees is I think personally a margin I'm willing to absorb.
All right, I'm way late for a break, and we're going to get that break in, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about a study that might surprise you regarding restaurant tipping. We're going to talk about haircutting, salon treatment, car washing. Mary on the phone wants to talk about housekeepers and maids. We've got more of your questions coming in, and we're even going to hear a classic movie clip that will help frame our discussion on how we do tip or don't. So let's get that short break in and come right back and talk tipping on member-supported public radio. I'm Evan Dawson on The Next Connections. It's Innovation Friday. First hour, we mark 40 years since Operation Baby Lift. In 1975, 2,700 Vietnamese babies and children were evacuated to the U.S. mainland. We will meet some of them as adults and find out how their lives have gone. Then in our second hour, aging infrastructure, fixing New York roads and bridges. How is it going to get done? Join us Friday.
Who needs passwords when you can use biometrics? Those include your voice.
My identity is secure because my voice is my passport.
Your face or fingerprint. Each is unique, but not foolproof.
Either a password or a biometric can be stolen, but only the password can be changed.
Risks and rewards of a biometric boom. Later today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 on WXXI.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson talking about the etiquette of tipping with Eric Hupert from Poor Coffee Parlor, where he's a barista and the beer and wine manager there. Caitlin Graham is the head bartender and general manager of Cure Restaurant in Rochester's Public Market. Stacy Cadzillo is the owner and manager of Park Avenue Salon and Day Spa. And Mike Schwabel, the president and co-owner of Dixon Schwabel Advertising, Marketing, and Public Relations. Stacy, haircuts, salon treatments, all of that stuff. There's nothing that's sort of written in stone about what you do with that. What are some industry standards for, say, for, let's start with haircuts. Men haircut, women's haircut, what's an industry standard?
I think the industry standard with the salon business is 20% of the service price. What I do want to mention is that our pay structure is significantly different from restaurants and coffee bars and those kind of things. It does vary from salon to salon, but in most cases, they're at least getting paid minimum wage. In our salon, most of our employees are commission paid, so it's a percent of what they bring in, which is significantly more than minimum wage. So I always like to refer to tips as gratuities instead, and I think that's a good spin to put on it. And I kind of think about that a lot when I'm giving tips or gratuities on my own part. Obviously not expected, greatly appreciated. And so really in that nature, you're showing gratitude for a service provided. And that's how I like to look at it in our salon. You know, it's a huge topic. I think the biggest problem is people really don't know what's the standard. Should they? Shouldn't they? The other catch that comes in a lot of times is we get people with gift cards. You know, they were given a gift. Mm-hmm. Maybe the tip wasn't included. They don't know if they should give a gratuity or not. And I think that's sometimes a gray area.
What do you tell them? They probably will ask you.
A lot of times people will say, you know, I've never had a massage before. Should I tip? And, what's the expectation? And so we usually give them a guideline. But what we always tell them is, 20% is the standard, but give what you're able or what you feel is appropriate. We never want to make the client feel like they have to do a certain amount. And I think my employees would agree with that, that's how we want it to be in our salon. But like I said, it varies from salon to salon in that regard. And like I said, just stressing gratuity. When I go to different things, when I think of a tip, I think about someone like in the restaurant industry where I know that part of that is putting together their pay. When I think of gratuity, I'm going somewhere where I know they're being paid well, but I'm really showing extra gratitude. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a huge distinction.
Mike Schwabel, you've talked about tipping in car washes. Our friend Norma Holland was talking about this very subject on Facebook, and you jumped in with some interesting comments there. What do you say about car washing, for example?
I like to tip at the car wash. First of all, I usually hand wash my cars. So going to the car wash is a treat for me, mm-hmm. right? My wife has a huge SUV, and believe me, going to the car wash is a treat. Not that I don't have to spend 3 hours on a Saturday morning. So I tip the guys going in, the guys with the wand at the car wash I go to. There's two guys with wands. They're the ones who really clean your car. And my wife always says, why do you tip them? You tip at the end. I said, no, these are the guys that get the whole process started. And then I do tip good at the end. I tip about $3 to the guy drying off the car because you don't want to pay all that money and then drive away with water spots on your car. And believe me, that extra dollar, it goes a long way to getting a nice, clean car, rearview mirrors and everything.
Well, we've got some listeners who want to jump in with some other angles here. Mary in Rochester talking about housekeepers or maids. Go ahead, Mary.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I am a housekeeper. I've been for years. And for housekeeping, the general rule is during the holidays or Christmas, you pay me in the amount of one house cleaning. If you have that person for the entire year cleaning your home. And also, when you're staying in a hotel or a bed and breakfast, you usually leave, not a bed and breakfast, but a hotel, you would leave something, a little bit of something each day because you'll have different cleaners coming in. It's not always the same person. So that's just a different side of tipping.
Thanks for the call, Mary. And it's a good reminder that there are some industries where we tip around the holidays, mail carrier, UPS, FedEx, that kind of a thing. And maybe not tipping all year long, but nice to hear at least a side of it, an idea for what to do around the holiday. It's not the holiday season right now. Tom has a really good question. Tom in Pittsford has a really good angle on paying tips or paying taxes on tips. Go ahead, Tom.
During the Reagan administration, my son was shocked and other people who were living on tips. Understanding was that they had to pay taxes on, it's assumed that they were getting 20% or maybe only 10% then, that they had to pay taxes on that. So that tax was taken out. Is that still the case?
Yes, and it's a bit of a gray area. I'm going to probably regret admitting that on the air, but the issue has to do with the sub-minimum wage. In other words, we are paid below minimum wage, and then it's expected that our tips will make up enough up to minimum wage. If that was for some reason not to happen, which would be extraordinarily rare, the house would then be, or the employer would then be obligated to cover the wage differential up to, a standard minimum wage. So you are expected to pay, as a tipped employee, taxes on your gratuities. Obviously, credit card gratuities are processed and thereby trackable. So immediately you will always pay tax on the credit card gratuities. Cash gratuities, it is left to the honor system of the employees to declare them.
I think that's enough said.
And we'll wrap it up right there. If you are a career service industry employee, you fall into a weird thing with your your income where you don't have a whole lot of trackable income. So when you get into things like equity or getting a mortgage, stuff like that, it can be a little bit difficult. And so it behooves you to claim as much of those as you can because it is your income. That said, you know, there's kind of a gray area there. So we do pay taxes on it.
I was going to say, in our business, it's a little different, Evan. We do track the gratuities, but they're in addition to their normal pay. So the employee pays payroll taxes and whatever is claimed on a weekly basis, and the employer does a match as well. So we, as the employer, are paying payroll tax on our employees' gratuities.
Okay, bartending. Caitlin Graham, head bartender over at Cure Restaurant in the Public Market. What is standard tip for ordering a drink at a bar?
Oh, man. okay, so dollar per drink, don't go below that. That would be uncouth. But a couple bucks for a drink is nice. And, you know, especially when you get into craft cocktails, I mean, these drinks take time. They take a lot of intention and thought. So the, you know, a little extra love is always appreciated. What about for a round of drinks? Are you required to tip a dollar per drink you ordered for a round? You know, say you're there with six of your friends. Does that mean you leave $6 for the round? Well, not necessarily. You know, if you get a round of shots, I don't ever expect, you know, $10 for a round of 10 shots. A five would suffice. But it's nice to have... you know, it's nice to have a little bit more than a dollar per drink. Definitely that would be the minimum. And then, you know, when you get into to larger quantities or you know, larger expenditures, then it starts to fall back onto more of a percentage system. It's kind of that gray area Eric was talking about of like, you know, what are you going to do? Take 22 cents on a dollar. You know, for a $9 drink, are you going to tip exactly 20%? No, a buck is fine.
Okay.
Two is better.
All right. Let's hit restaurants because we've had a lot of questions on restaurants as well. And Bill James is a longtime statistician and historian who has predicted that by the year 2050, we will no longer see tipping in this country the way it's currently constructed. We'll move to a European model. He thinks that's where we're going. And Cornell University did a very interesting study in which they found, and let me pull up, make sure this was interesting. The real reason, according to Cornell, the real reasons people tip more or less in restaurants are essentially random, not related to quality of service. And in an extensive study of people who cited that they had great service in restaurants, they tipped, on average, 1% more. Does that surprise you, Caitlin?
No, not really. I think that, you know, there are sort of industry standards. I think with the credit card machines, I notice a lot people like to make whole dollar amounts, you know, so their bill will be 89 something and then they make it an even 100 or, and I'm guilty of that too, just in an anal retentive visual tendency, but like it, no, you know, I think there's standards. I think sometimes you get a little bit extra for good service. But I think generally speaking, people who tip well are going to tip well across the board, whether their service is average, maybe a little below average, or terrific. You know, outstanding service, 1% more. Atrocious service, maybe less. I think the bad tippers are going to be bad tippers no matter what as well.
Yeah, well, you know, this reminds me of the Reservoir Dogs, where Steve Buscemi's character refused to put in for the tip, and they had a debate about that. Let's listen to that clip from Reservoir Dogs.
Come on, throw in a buck.
I don't tip.
You don't tip?
No, I don't believe in it.
You don't believe in tipping?
You know what these chicks make? Don't give me that. She don't make enough money, she can quit.
Let me just get this straight. You don't ever tip, huh?
I don't tip because society says I have to. All right, I mean, I'll tip if somebody really deserves a tip. If they really put forth the effort, I'll give them something extra. But, I mean, it's tipping automatically. It's for the birds. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, they're just doing their job. Jesus Christ, I mean, these ladies aren't starving to death. They make minimum wage. You know, I used to work minimum wage, and when I did, I wasn't lucky enough to have a job that society deemed tip-worthy.
You don't have any idea what you're talking about. This is a hard job.
So I was working at McDonald's, but you don't feel the need to tip them, do you? Why not? They're serving you food. But no, society says, don't tip these guys over here, but tip these guys over here.
Eric, that's one of your favorite movies.
It is. That's a tough one to swallow, though, in the service industry.
Now, he's making the McDonald's comparison. Why,
sure.
Why tip at a higher-end restaurant, not McDonald's?
Without, you kind of have to sound like a jerk when you say it, but I go back to what Mike said about value, perhaps. I think that there's something there. There's a conversation there. I think that this is where the conversation and where all these asinine headlines about Hillary Clinton and Chipotle can really be turned into a legitimate political conversation around what is the framework here for these industries, for living wages, mm-hmm. for yeah. regulation mm-hmm. or lack thereof. And that's really where it does turn into a legitimate conversation, because if we're going to pay living wages and then not expect tips anymore, move to this European model, then our food is going to start costing 150% more. And the companies, the restaurants, all of these tip-based industries, in an empathetic way, me speaking to the consumer, they've put it on you. No one wants to take responsibility necessarily for meeting the minimum standard to offer you a service, make money, and pay your employee. And that's where the tips kind of lie in this gray area.
It's perceived social value as well. And I think that we, you know, in the last half century, maybe longer, we kind of moved culturally away from domestic trade jobs being seen as viable careers. I mean, trade school used to be in every high school a legitimate and laudable option, and it's not anymore. Even directing students into BOCES programs does not get the same push. Now it's every kid has to go to college. Even a bachelor's isn't good enough. Now you need a master's, you know. College is excruciatingly expensive, and not every kid is college bound. It's not a reality. And so to kind of shift that, that mindset back to appreciating, trade skill jobs and having that be something that we value in the American marketplace. We say we value it, but our politics don't reflect that.
Yeah, I think the living wage question is a mm-hmm. separate but related mm-hmm. discussion. I think you guys are right. I think that may be what kind of comes out of that whole question about fast food. We've seen it that debate carried out. Last quick question from a listener. Writes in and says, often I'm hesitant to tip because I'm afraid that I will either tip entirely too much or not enough. It's almost better to not tip than be thought of as a cheapskate. Is that right? What should I do? Also, I never have cash on me. Mm. Well, Tim says if you don't have cash, rob it from your six-year-old. But if you can't do that, better to not tip at all than to be a cheap tipper? No?
No, I say ask. If you don't know and you want to know, ask. I have clients ask all the time, and we'll give them the guidance.
Mike, would you ask if you don't know?
I would ask. And, one point I wanted to bring up is that, tips are, the tipper gets something out of giving a tip, too. You can't write a thank you note to everybody, so it's an instant way of saying thank you.
Sure.
And so it goes both ways.
All right. Tip well. Lots of thank you and appreciation notes. Send it to management. That's a great way to do it. A lot of takeaways from this hour. More discussion on living wage. The phones, we couldn't even get through half of the phone calls. If you did not get through this hour, thank you to the mainstream media to make us think about tipping. We'll have to talk about it again. Eric Cooper is from Poor Coffee Parlor. Thank you for coming over.
Thank you.
Caitlin Graham from Cure Restaurant in the Public Market. Thank you, Caitlin.
Thank you so much, Evan. Eric, I can't wait to see that baby.
Stacy Cazillo from Park Avenue Salon and Day Spa. Thank you.
Thank you, Evan.
Mike Schwabel from Dixon Schwabel Advertising and Public Relations. Thank you.
Tip those guys at the car wash.
Have a great day, everyone. We'll talk to you on Innovation Friday.